Hi, everyone. It's ya boy, occasionally disgraced film critic Daniel Barnes, and welcome to Single Take, because Double Take is, it's just too much. It's, that's excessive. You're going to get my single and hopefully singular take on the hottest films of the days. So in other words, don't send help if possible. I desperately need someone, anyone. If you're out there, please send no help. I'm back with a couple of quick hitter reviews of new movies that are opening this week or coming soon to a theater near you. That's 2 weeks in a row. I would love to do one of these every week, or at least every other week, as long as I have something to talk about. This week, what I have to talk about is a couple of new releases that I'll be discussing with myself over the next 10, 15 minutes. I won't keep it too long. I'm not here to take... I'm not one of these four-hour podcasts that just keeps going and going and going. No. In and out. That's what you get with Dan Barnes. A little of the old. In and out. No. So what I've got to talk about is the survivalist action-adventure horror comedy Send Help and the crime thriller The Rip. So let's start with Send Help.
I'm going to be frank with you. You are smart. I know that you are great with numbers, but I just don't think you got it. As an executive, I see no value in you. Does that make sense?
I'm sorry, what?
You know, we have the Bangkok merger.
IMDb synopsis of Send Help says, quote, an employee and her insufferable boss become stranded on a deserted island. The only survivors of a plane crash. Here they must overcome past grievances and work together to survive. Will they make it out alive? I cannot even tell you what a grammatical nightmare that lasts. Just use Grammarly, people, with your commas. Send Help. It stars Rachel McAdams and Dylan O'Brien, and it's largely what you would call a two-hander. Get your mind out of the gutter. Two-hander just means the film largely consists of just these two actors. The film is directed by Sam Raimi, only his third film since 2009. The other two were pretty forgettable brand-name movies, Oz the Great and Powerful, and Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. He's mostly known, Sam Raimi, for that over-the-top comic book come horror style of his, but he's done a fair amount of genre hopping throughout his career. He's been making movie. Evil Dead was 82, 81, something like that, so we're 45 years into, and he was making movies even before Evil Dead, so he's been around a while. But he's made, of course, horror films, superhero movies, but also westerns, supernatural mysteries, even a baseball movie in there, a really bad baseball movie to boot. But Send Help, for the most part, returns Raimi to his recognizable roots. It's offering elements of slick action, blood-gushing horror, and dark comedy. It's hard to pin down a genre for Send Help, which I think is part of the fun, these twists and turns of the film. It's hard to say exactly where it's going. But the central concept, I would compare it to other films about power struggles and power shifts among castaways. I'm thinking about Swept Away by the Sea, the Lina Wertmüller film, and the latter part of Triangle of Sadness as well. Tom Hanks and Wilson in Castaway, who can forget those power struggles? But it's basically a combination of survival and rivalry that I have dubbed survivalry. McAdams plays Linda Little, an eminently competent but socially maladroit employee at Company, with a capital C. I don't think it's ever mentioned what this company is or what it does or why it exists, but it doesn't matter. It's all very broadly drawn. As the film starts, Linda is passed over for a promised promotion by Bradley, the man-spreading, spoiled, rotten douche scion of the newly deceased owner of Company. He's played by Dylan O'Brien, and although Linda's a top performer at Company, he rejects her basically because of superficial reasons. She doesn't fit the bill. She doesn't dress right. She's not liked by her coworkers. She's not popular. She eats tuna sandwiches at her desk. She's the portrait of awkward office behavior. Whereas Bradley has everything: wealth, power, good looks, a stunning fiance, and that perfect sense of entitlement that comes with being rich and talentless. But in addition to being a social pariah, we discover that Linda, like most social pariahs, is a huge fan of reality TV, especially the show Survivor. And for anyone who was at the Sacramento screening who didn't get the cross promotion in coordination with the 50th anniversary of Survivor, past winner and West Sacramento native Joe Turner was there to introduce the film and present a trailer for the new season. So they, this is not accidental. The timing of it's not accidental. This is all very intentional. Although, you know, a Sam Raimi movie in January, you could do worse in January than a new Sam Raimi movie. And my mom would have been super excited, but she wasn't there. Well, that survivor aspect, again, it comes into play in the film. It's more than mere fandom for Linda. She's not just a fan of the show. She's applied to be on the show, and she has all of the necessary skills to thrive on the show, absent maybe like social skills, but certainly it's the survival skills. So when their plane crashes into the ocean and she's trapped with an injured yet still douchey Bradley on a tropical island, she gets this chance to live out her survivor fantasy. Bradley proves utterly useless while on the mend, helpless even after recuperating, but Linda thrives, putting her survivalist knowledge to good use, building shelters, collecting rainwater, and hunting a wild boar. She's her best self on the island, away from all of the kind of social demands. Bradley, however, is utterly exposed without the trappings of wealth, but that's just the first round in this increasingly violent and crazed series of face-offs, betrayals, reconciliations, and then other betrayals between Linda and Bradley. And what I think the film is getting at, beyond just being this sort of wild ride, is showing how useless the rich and powerful are outside their bubble of wealth. That's obvious, but I think it's also showing how these sort of power imbalances are inevitable in any type of survival, whether it's a, you know, every second you're trying to survive society or a very cushy society. That kind of power balance is maybe endemic to humanity. Linda's perfectly happy to use what she has newfound power, and she uses it to punish. She uses it to deceive and destroy and discard people. Sometimes even just for fun, she does this. So in the same way that Bradley does. And she keeps saying she's not like him, but ultimately she sort of is like him. As I said, it's mainly just these two actors for the entire show. And they're up to the task, both of them. Rachel McAdams. Even if it's hard to buy Rachel McAdams as such a widely loathed person, it is a really good performance, and she's the perfect actress to navigate these wild changes in character and find nuances that may not have even been there on the page. Dylan O'Brien, I'll be honest, I did not know much about this guy until a couple of years ago when me and Darcy watched all three of the Maze Runners movies. And they were fairly entertaining movies, but he did not strike me as someone I needed to keep an eye on. At all. But I've completely done a 180 on Mr. O'Brien. He has completely changed my mind just in the last year. First with his excellent dual turn in Twinless, also for a very strong supporting performance in the underseen and a little underrated Anniversary. And his Bradley here, he's conceived as a one-note douche. We hate this guy right from the beginning, partly because O'Brien's just really good at playing a douche. But he makes him just perfectly pitiless. It's a very physical performance. Another really fine job by O'Brien. And overall, it's a very entertaining film. Lots of twists. Definitely a ride. However, the cartoonish aspects of the movie did not always work for me. And I know Raimi, I'm very familiar with his work, and I know in part this is just Raimi being Raimi and getting back to the old Raimi. I did feel just a tiny little bit more grounding in reality and a tiny little bit less ripping out chunks of brain. Might have made these characters feel a little less one-dimensional, a little less paper thin, and the setup a little less contrived. Instead, there's a lot going on. Some of it's good, some of it's not as good. There's a lot of the CGI blood spatter, which always just looks like weird digital bubbles flying out. It just always looks bad. I'm not some purist of gore or anything, but like red food coloring, maybe? I don't know. It's not, you know, I don't want to tell you how to do your job, but do that. There's a couple of gonzo scenes. I won't really give it away, but I would just say body fluid discharging. Gonzo fluid discharging. And they're definitely memorable. Maybe not for the right reasons, but you will definitely know what I mean when you see it. And although, like I said, the film is mostly at McAdams and O'Brien, there's one other recognizable actor here, the great character actor Dennis Haysbert. He's on screen for maybe 15 seconds, which, along with the seemingly rushed nature of the finale, gives off the smell of reshoots and re-edits, which could account for some of the unevenness. So overall, a lot to like with Send Help. I can't throw the full weight of my recommendation behind it, but again, more good than bad. And as far as January releases go, again, this is not bad. Already in January, there's been a Raimi, there's been a Lav Diaz movie, there's apparently a new Dardenne Brothers film, Gore Verbinski next month. So yeah, not doing too bad as far as auteurs for the winter auteurs, when usually the auteurs are all kind of closed for the season. So that's what I got to say about Send Help, and let's rip it up and move it on to The Rip, IMDb synopsis of The Rip. A group of Miami cops discovers a stash of millions in cash, leading to distrust as outsiders learn about the huge seizure, making them question who to rely on. Now, you got that straight there? These are Miami cops, okay? They're not from Boston. Perfect accent. Classic. Southie. Yeah, it's Damon and Affleck. Okay, they're back together again. Reunited because it feels like, I don't know, it's time, I guess. It's been a few years, so let's reunite. This is their 11th time appearing on screen together in a film. That doesn't count their collaborations as screenwriters and producers, their appearances in Project Greenlight, and I think Dunkin' Donuts commercials. On and on and on. So they're very familiar with each other. We're very familiar with them. They're familiar with us somehow. I don't know. Wormholes, maybe? Damn lizard people reading our minds? But the real strength of The Rip, I think, lies in the ensemble, which includes newly minted Academy Award nominee Teyana Taylor, plus Steven Yeun, Kyle Chandler, Sasha Calle, and Catalina Sandino Moreno. Sturdy stuff there. I think there's like three or four Oscar nominees in there. Not counting, of course, Damon and Affleck. The Rip was directed by Sacramento native Joe Carnahan, who's helmed several crime films over his now 30-plus year career. We had a couple of lifers this week with Joe and Sam. Damn. And a good week for my fellow Sacramento State graduates. Stinger's up with Carnahan helming the number one film on Netflix. Ryan Coogler, his film Sinners, received a record number of Oscar nominations last week. The closest antecedent to The Rip for Carnahan would be his gritty 2002 film Narc. It's got a similar visual aesthetic. Handheld cameras thrusting you right into the middle of the action, really from the opening scene. There's this just overall kind of potboiler sort of tension. And an overall air of corruption and mistrust. It kind of strikes me now that both The Rip and Send Help are driven by trust, mistrust, tenuous trust, the need for trust, the inability to trust. Both Linda and Bradley repeatedly prove untrustworthy in Send Help. And in The Rip, everyone's a suspect, even our protagonist. Matt Damon plays Dane Dumars, leader of a special unit called the Tactical Narcotics Team, TNT Dynamite. They're mourning the death of their captain. That's the opening action scene there. And Dane receives a tip about a stash house. His team, which includes trusted second-in-command Ben Affleck as JD, unearth over $20 million in cash to their surprise. And with that much money on the table, threats emerge from inside and outside the house. Corrupt cops buzz by, threatening calls are made. Gunmen emerge from the shadows, and Dane has to decide who can he trust on his team, who can he trust on other teams like the DEA or the police, and more importantly, given his increasingly erratic and bizarre behavior as the film goes on, can anyone on Dane's team trust him? So that's the cat and mouse game of The Rip. And it's certainly a very watchable film without ever becoming exceptional in any way or even approaching it in any way. It all just kind of sits on that first level of meat and potato genre fare without doing anything to risk that status, to do anything weird, bad, or good enough to fall out of that line. Dads and granddads, this is a film you can look forward to falling asleep during on some Saturday afternoon and then forget it ever existed. That's the real enduring legacy of this movie. So that's The Rip. Two mixed reactions this week. Mixed positive, most really positive, I would say, but not quite to the bump level where I'm going to tell you, run out and go see this. That's mixed positive for the survivalry. Been there, coined that. Film Send Help. And about as middle in the, if there's the middle, the absolute middle of the scale is right where you have The Rip. Send Help is opening wide today. Again, can't put the full weight behind it, but it's pretty damn good for January. It's about as good as you're going to get for a January release, not counting the Oscar nominees that are sort of trickling out right now. The Rip is now playing on Netflix. I don't believe it went to theaters at all. The film was actually made with a unique carrot dangling over the production. The deal, I was not privy to the negotiations, but the deal, as I understand it, was everyone on the crew got some sort of a bonus, like everyone, all down to the line, if the film achieved a certain level of viewership on Netflix. And presumably it's done that. It's still, I think, the number one, as I'm recording this, I just looked, it was the number one film like 2 weeks after its release. And I'm never going to hate on anyone for getting paid, so congratulations on your bonuses, people. Although it does seem like a system that would encourage a sort of ultra-efficient mediocrity, and having watched The Rip, I can tell you, you get what you pay for. So that's all we have for you on this episode of Single Take with me, Daniel Barnes. I'll be back with more reviews of new movies sometime in the next week or two. If you're a fan of classic movies, why don't you check out the Cannon Fodder podcast, which I co-host with the great Quirky McDonald. We just released our review of Godard's Perrault le Fou earlier this week, and then we've got Abbas Kiarostami's masterful... No, that was last week that we did that? Yes, that was last week, Perrault le Fou. And next week we have Where's the Friend's House by Abbas Kiarostami. So if you want to support any of these endeavors, please visit daredaniel.com. If you'd like to support us financially, find support the show in the menu. Hit us up on the PayPal with a donation, one-time donation, monthly donation. The support of our donors is so essential, and as always, it's hugely appreciated. So until next time, I'm Daniel Barnes saying thank you to our donors, and save me a seat in the back row. Bye-bye.